excuse me, folks. Just the mayor's not here yet. I'm sure he's on his way, but we have a quorum present. So let's get started with the meeting. And first up on the agenda is.
Yes, sir. So first up on the agenda is the 2021 annual report for the Columbia Climate Action and Adaptation Plan.
Good afternoon. My name is Leanne Stutmosby. I am the new chair of the Climate Department Commission. Pleased to be here today to. I'm going to keep my comments brief, but I did want to make a few recognitions. First, I wanted to recognize Carol Operon. Who's the former chair? She was the chair of the Climate and Environment Commission since its inception, and she's done an amazing job. And so I have huge shoes to fill, which has been taking a long time to catch up with the great way that she handled the commission. And I'm very pleased to report she has been vice chair, so she'll continue to second, I wanted to thank our staff liaison, Eric Keppel, and all of the city staff who are just great to work with. They not only, of course, do they have the but they are just invaluable to us in terms of providing information to us. They're always very helpful and helpful. So I wanted to recognize them. And finally, I wanted to recognize the council and the mayor and the community for their dedication to the long-term commitment of the town. I was formerly a state government official and with responsibilities for the environment working for Department of Natural Resources. And even though I was a state government official, I recognized a long time ago that it's local governments that are really taking the lead in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and addressing the very difficult problem of climate change. So kudos, and I'm honored to be a part of this. In the report, you will see the commissioner's input on the annual report. It begins on page 12, and it's embodied in a memo that was drafted by Carolyn and prepared on behalf of the commission. And that portion of the report outlines the commission's request related to the city budget and operations, as well as major accomplishments of the commission in the last year. And then in tabular form, you will find the detailed list of the commission's priorities for 2022. And now I'm going to turn it over to Eric, who's going to go through the report in more detail.
Thanks, Leanne. So good evening, Mayor Treese, members of the council. I'm happy to present the 2021 annual report to you tonight. At a high level, the year 2021 was a time of transition and rebuilding, as well as some great progress. The Climate and Environment Commission, Office of Sustainability, and the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan teams established some foundational elements of our lower carbon future. So before I go any further, I said I was going to do this right away, but I've got a couple of my staff here tonight that I just wanted to invite you to recognize. Danielle Fox sitting over here, and then next to her is Becca Elder. They do a great job helping us out. We're a small and mighty team, and I'm glad that they can be here tonight, and you all can at least know their faces, or at least part of some of their faces. So progress this year. Include policies that are going to be able to guide the reduction of our building energy and transportation emissions. And these sectors alone, building energy and transportation, account for 70% of our total municipal emissions. In addition, these policies provide a platform for leadership as we reflect those goals and programs and priorities to the larger community. So that's kind of my high-level view of the year 2021. And we'll get into some details and long-term trends. Now, the information in this slide is for the period of 2015, our baseline assessment year, to 2020. The Office of Sustainability and the Climate and Environment Commission will be making another report to the council later this summer covering the 2021 community and municipal emissions. So as you can see, there's been some modest reductions from 2015 to 2020 in both emissions inventories. From 2019 to 2020, in both inventories again, the biggest sector of reduction was in transportation. across the board that's been attributed to the impact of COVID, working at home, and other changes to how we do, how we live and do business. Let's see. So these inventories are a high-level assessment at our emissions, but the progress of the CAP actions, the 161 actions that are in the CAP, are difficult to assess at this level. So what we do is we have been establishing key performance indicators that really allow us to track the impact and the progress of some of the more specific CAP actions. So looking at building energy efficiency, trying to prioritize local renewable energy, looking at transportation emissions in our municipal fleet. So as we can track these more granular performance indicators, it gives us a better idea of some of the, more, the fine detail of the impact we're making. I wanted to make a quick note about the energy trend here at the top. I usually get questions about it. So the renewable energy percentage of the total, this is one of the few, one of the two that's in red. And this 2020 target was established using a modeling tool that we used to develop the CAP in 2019. It's not the same thing as the renewable energy, the existing renewable energy ordinance. So that level prescribed was 15%, and that is what the utility met. So once we have that impending conversation about renewable energy in our community, I expect that discrepancy to resolve. So just wanted to point that out.
Could you talk about the recycling one as well?
Say again?
The recycling has an R on it as well. Is that because that was the year that we were unable to provide recycling? Pick up at the curve?
No, that's a fairly steady trend of it's of downward, of not meeting the targets.
Will you talk about that a little later so I can do a follow-up question, or do you want me to do that now?
We can talk about it if you have a follow-up question.
So I saw a reference to the contamination of recycling and how that limits your ability to actually, I guess, sell it back as a recycled material. Would any part of that drop be because of contamination so that this is like the clean yield of recycling?
So the contamination that you're talking about is something that the CAP teams will be addressing, but that is the amount of non-recyclable material comes into the recycling center. So if there's a blue bag that's full of cardboard or dirty diapers, that's contamination. So that's what the contamination we're talking about.
So it's not when I haven't washed my bottles all the way or whatever. I know I'm a bad person.
It might not be.
Okay.
It might not be. Right. You should wash your bottles.
I know.
On the transportation performance measures, acknowledging that 2020 was an aberration because of the economic and transportation impact of the pandemic, do you have those data, municipal fleet emissions and citywide greenhouse gas emissions from transportation for 2019 to see where we sort of were before the pandemic became?
We do have that data. I'm fairly confident in saying that the fleet emissions have been on a steady downward trend. Transportation emissions have been fairly flat.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we were only looking for a relatively small reduction in the target there, but you're saying we probably didn't meet that in 2019.
Right. Yeah. And we will have much further and more in-depth discussion about the emissions at this level when we bring back the next report.
Okay. Thanks.
So this is how we measure progress. The way that we make progress is using these CAP teams that I've talked about. And the CAP teams really are the engines that drive getting these actions from the plan, words on paper, to actual implemented programs and policies. And they're cross-departmental teams from all levels of the organization. We've got 50 city employees from 37 divisions and 13 departments. They work on education programs, communication programs, data analysis, policy and program, research and development. So this is something that we would have a lot less to talk about if we didn't have the ability to maximize these employees' expertise and dedication and passion to move this forward. This is all work that happens outside of regular work. Yes.
Are these volunteers or are these people that you're assigning to the project?
A little bit of both. Some of them are assigned by their department directors. Some people actually volunteer to be on with the teams.
Just wondering if you have all the expertise that you need. Are there areas, you know, in any department where it's, you know, maybe just...
Well, I think we have a lot to learn as an organization. We were doing great things, but this field is new, relatively new, and so just getting folks in. But I will say that I have been surprised with the relationships, impressed more than surprised, mm-hmm. with the relationships that staff has been able to make between what they're doing and what could change and how improvements can be made. So, yeah. Okay, so a little bit, it's kind of like a how a bill becomes a law. I'm not going to have a song, though, but I just want to go through a little bit of the process about how we get through from ideation to implementation. So we've got the CAP teams that I mentioned. They're organized into five different categories, each with their own kind of area of specialty. And their job is to develop projects that are either going to fulfill a CAP action or be the stepping stones that we need to get to fulfilling a CAP action. So these are the 50 employees across all the departments. Now, in order to make sure that the CAP actions, these projects that are coming out of the CAP teams are aligned with the CAP goals, the leadership of these different CAP teams is tasked with making sure that there is that alignment and going back and kind of facilitating the development process. Also preparing these projects for review and approval at the next level, which is kind of what we're calling the executive team level. And this is a enterprise-wide lens, so folks at the department director level will evaluate the fleet electrification policy or the energy benchmarking policy and make sure that it's integrated with our city and department plans and that it's they're making sure that the overall organizational and financial impacts are in line, are not overly burdensome, right? So occasionally there are projects that require changes to budgets, so they'll follow the same budget process. And then when council approves the budget item, then it becomes an implementable action, and its implementation will be supported with the sustainability project management team and any of the other related work groups in the city organization. Okay, so now on to specifics about these teams. The first team that I want to talk about is our clean energy team. So in 2021, the clean energy team, like a lot of folks within the city and other places, followed the development of the Integrated Electric Resource and Master Plan. Mm-hmm. In 2022, this team is planning to develop educational and communication materials to help support that important community and technical conversation about renewable energy in Columbia. And then this team's also ready to support the successful revision of the renewable energy ordinance and be on hand to advise in that process. So the resource stewardship team, yes.
Question. So I wanted to ask a question about the Integrated Electric Resource Master Planning process, because after we were delivered the document, I asked then city manager, so what's the next step with that? And he said that the department, the utilities department, would look at it and bring back some recommendations to us. Are those recommendations intertwined with your recommendations, and are you part of that process by which the staff, I mean, there's some big recommendations in there. Are we going this way or this way for redundant electric transmission? But is that something that you are part of, those evaluations?
At this point, no.
Okay.
I anticipate, because of the conversations I've had with staff and utilities, that we're going to
that we will come together and kind of evaluate. But in my understanding, I don't really understand. I don't really have knowledge of where that process is in the utilities. But the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. We also are developing and will deliver soon some CAP education to our city staff, kind of as a CAP 1-on-1, and also to city council. This education will really support the integration of CAP metrics into the CIP and budget planning processes. We've got some initial opportunities that we're evaluating right now with those two planning processes. And then also really looking forward to reflecting these foundational elements that we've talked about and our municipal goals and programs out to the community. Certainly through, partners with whom we already have relationships, but I think also more importantly, those partners that we don't know about yet. So we're really going to be trying to expand who we're talking about, how we're talking about it, and just make this more widely understood position of leadership that the City of Columbia is taking in this.
Mr. Thomas.
Thanks. So I'm pleased to hear you talk about partnerships and to see Columbia Public Schools up there. To what extent have you met with Boone County officials about the Climate Action Adaptation Plan, about the fact that that applies to the City of Columbia, which is a big part and the majority of the population of Boone County?
Yeah. So we've met with the, I don't know their departments very well, but the Resource Management Department, in charge of kind of stormwater and permitting, and have had some really good initial conversations about how we can how we can learn from them, and how we can start to build the common ground where we can move forward on projects as far as planning, stormwater, just learning how they've been able to get some different approaches into developments.
Do they have any kind of initiatives or documents, plans along, carbon footprint reduction?
Not that I'm aware of, no. But they do have a lot of very good watershed planning documents and plans that they're revising.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Can we move on to police and fire?
Yes, sir.
Could I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
That we have the letter to the CATSO Coordinating Committee, which is essentially connected with the topic we just had, maybe go straight to that and then do the fire afterwards.
Not a bad idea. Sheila, do you have copies of that?
Thank you.
So maybe I'll just sort of introduce this.
That'd be great.
You remember at the meeting a month ago, we received a report from the Climate and Environment Commission, having done an analysis of the CATSO long-range transportation plan and made some recommendations to us as the City Council, one of which was to write a letter to the CATSO Coordinating Committee and send this report that the Climate and Environment Commission produced examining the CATSO Long Range Transportation Plan, in particular looking at where there are certain conflicts with our Climate Action Adaptation Plan. And you all asked me to sort of draft the cover letter that would go with that. So this is it. I didn't really add anything. I really just took elements from the report, what I thought were kind of the high points, and would just ask you to take a look at that and see if you're happy to put your names to that or if you want to make any edits before we put it on letterhead and send it with the report to the members of that coordinating committee.
Did we get a copy of the report? I went back to that February 21st meeting.
It was on the agenda for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a report on the agenda.
Well, there's a memo, a one-page memo.
It's about a 7-page report.
That 9-page.
Yeah, that's about right.
Has everyone had a chance to read the letter? Thoughts?
I have a couple of word changes.
Sure.
Because I don't know how if they'll stop hearing at this point. But when it says, I'm on the middle paragraph, they indicate that the long-range transportation plan is poorly constructed. Would that also mean that it's difficult to read?
That's really the final point. The poor construction refers to the fact that the goals and objectives are not aligned with the plan, and that the performance measures are never measured and never used in any way.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of the poor construction part.
Okay, and where it says uninformed about important transportation planning considerations, I would say silent about important transportation, because that's a little less...
Because that's referring to both equity and climate impacts.
And is the inaccessible part, that's the difficult to read part?
Correct.
Yeah, I would actually change that to difficult to read. It is difficult to read.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Difficult to read. And then the poorly construction or maybe I get the alignment part. I read both the report from the commission, and you and I have talked about this a couple of times. I wonder if there isn't a more direct way to say, under the poorly constructed, to say something about the misalignment.
Well, it does say that above.
I see
in
that.
The four. But I'm, you know.
I'm looking for some way to.
But however you would like to say it.
Well, and maybe we just leave it the way you have stated it.
I think because it's cited. Referenced, you know, the
they
notes above
that,
I think it makes sense as is.
But I like silent
yeah.
on important transportation.
Rather
plan.
Than uninformed.
Yeah.
It's silent.
Yeah, I have no particular objection to including that point number four with the difficult to read and understand. I'm not sure it's even necessary, but you have stressed the business about the misalignment in the first section, and I think that's the crux of it. That's the really, it's the meat of the matter.
Yeah,
is the misalignment between the goals and the two goals in the project list.
I guess the thing that gives me a little pause is the last sentence. We will direct city representatives not to approve or allocate funds.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a fairly absolute across the board. And there are a lot of plans and a lot of projects. I don't know. That's the one that kind of
more like the language that we would direct the City of Columbia representatives to carefully consider allocations based on.
So.
Or more carefully consider.
Yeah, I would have to agree. The absoluteness of it gave me pause. The rest of the letter looked really good, but that was sort of like. You know, that it's hard to go with the pros and cons. It's somewhat like the Discovery Parkway thing where, you know, that's not exactly with the city goals, but it does move the traffic along so that you don't have people stuck in traffic running their engines while they're stuck at I-70 and 63 or whatever. At the same time, it does move people. It doesn't make everything much smaller. So I was a little uncomfortable with that sentence also.
Yeah, it came from the Climate Environment Commission's report. They asked us to make that direction. Now, we don't have to do exactly what they say, but...
It's always good to talk about it, though, and I like the rest of it. You know, I like the you know, this is what we have, and this is what we're looking for, and we'd like to get everybody on the same page.
I just don't like to lock in the language, now that it's been brought up, lock up the language of what we are or are not going to do and bind anybody to it. I want them to have to get the idea very clearly that because there is misalignment, because of some of these other issues, we will have to take a closer look, or we will have to more carefully consider whether or not allocations will be forthcoming if they don't meet, if they work against the city goals and paths. That's.
CATSO doesn't fund allocations anyway.
No,
those projects still come back to
right.
Council.
Right. But just to let them know that we are doing something, taking some action, because of the fact that there are some issues here.
I am, while I may recommend a wording change, I am okay that we are saying that increasingly, as we embrace more fully our own CAP plan, we will be making decisions along those lines, because otherwise, you know, we've already had 3 years of the CAP plan, and we'd like to be further along, and then we're going to hit, this is 2022, and there's some deadlines in 2030, and there's some other things that could be pushed to 2035, and we have to get about the business of doing that. So maybe not say, I think we could give them fair notice that increasingly over time, this will be our position. I would feel comfortable with that, and I think that's a good way to signal that we have to get about the business of attending to this.
I would agree. It sort of feels idle if we don't, like an idle threat, if we
mm-hmm.
don't say, look, this is something we really care about, and we're going to strongly encourage this going forward. I would be in agreement. I don't know that I like it as written. I like everything else, but I think if we were to remove it altogether, that sort of defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
So what if we said, as part of our commitment to our own public engagement, community representation processes, representatives, City of Columbia representatives on the CATSO Coordinating Committee will view projects through the lens of the city's goals and plans, including the CAP.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah, I like that.
View, strongly consider, view.
Will
what?
View, review.
Or will vote, will cast their votes through the lens or on the basis of. I mean, the
just,
fact
I mean,
is,
you just have to give them the idea that you're right. We're in charge of the funding here,
right.
And you have to give them the idea that something is going to change if some of these remedies are not solved.
And the City of Columbia has 4 votes out of 9 on that committee. And to my knowledge, in the last 9 years, we have never once given any direction to how our representatives should vote on that committee. I think it's something we should do.
So city staff on there, we can. Can't direct them to do anything.
Well, we can set the policy that we are increasingly going to align ourselves with the goal of the CAP.
Review projects consistent with the city's goals and plans.
Yeah.
Yep. There it is.
But at some point, if we're not making enough progress, we're going to have to, whether it's the dining room, dinner, dimmer switch approach or not, we're going to have to dial that up. Or we're not going to, I mean, one of the recommendations also under the letter is that it be part of the review process for our city manager, who we do direct, that we make more substantial progress on CAP. And so I would think that we need to also be clear that that's going to be the policy push that we're making to our own city manager. And, you know, there's some wordsmithing that goes on here, and the mayor is, Brian, you're brilliant in the use of words and setting that message, but I would like the message to be clearer that we will be changing our behavior, and our behavior will then be reflected in our interactions and our participation on CATSO.
Yeah, I just want us to be realistic that CATSO doesn't fund anything. They don't build a damn thing.
Right.
They make plans.
Right.
And all those plans come back to us for approval.
Correct.
This body.
And so that's what I was going to see, if you don't mind, if we can have Tim talk a little bit about the difference between the CATSO plan and the city's transportation plan and how they interact with each other. So I think that's kind of important. It's
purposes of having CATSO is so you can do intergovernmental coordination. So one of the plan products that we spent a lot of time on is called the Transportation Improvement Program, and that's where we in effect tell each other this is what the city is spending its transportation revenues on, especially the federal funds, because again, the reason we have an organization that's known generally as a Metropolitan Plan Organization is Federal Transportation Planning Law tells us we must if we're going to receive those funds. So, when you talk about allocating funds, I don't see CATSO as really having a major role in deciding how much is allocated to this or that type of transportation improvement. But what we do is we ensure that we're achieving compliance with the need for coordination. So we put this four-year program together where we show, okay, in year one, we're going to do design for an intersection improvement. In year two, we're going to construct it. And that's so the partners can see what one another is doing in the metro area. So that's the improvement program aspect. The long-range plan, of course, is where you envision the system that you want the region to have. So, and that's required to have at least a 20-year planning horizon. We do have to update it every 5 years. It's got a cumulative aspect to it. In other words, there's a lot of content in the plan that's being brought forward because there were ideas in the past that are still part of the transportation plan. So I'm talking about things like corridors that were added to the plan a number of years ago, sometimes a generation ago, that we continue to include in the plan because it's part of a strategy to have an integrated transportation planning system. So, but it's an advisory body. You could take the criteria that you referenced in your letter, and you could certainly use that on the transportation improvements that are part of your capital improvement program for the city. Because I would see that as being more immediate. And I think the message to us on the CATSO committees is that there's an expectation of the council that we pay attention to the CAP, that we in fact look at it as an important factor in deciding what the transportation priorities need to be in that report.
In response to the argument that CATSO doesn't allocate funds, it is a fact that the CATSO Coordinating Committee votes to approve the long-range transportation plan every 5 or 10 years, and that plan includes lists of specific projects with dollar figures attached. And then those projects flow through from the long-range transportation plan into the transportation improvement program and then into the City of Columbia's long-range, capital improvement program. So it's not legislating funding into it, but it comes in with a lot of momentum, and it's very, very difficult to even have a conversation about doing something different from what has been in the long-range transportation plan for 20 years.
Mr. Seawood, so I may be oversimplifying this, but going back to, at one point I was a county planning and zoning commissioner. Mm-hmm. And so we would talk about CATSO and what that meant. And my understanding at that time from county staff was the CATSO plan is not the city's road plan, but it turns out to be the county's road plan.
Right.
And since we are still a city that expands and annexes, where I connect the dots on that is, if it's the county's road plan and they're building that for the subdivision work that's on our buffer or perimeter or fringe, whatever you want to call it, eventually it's going to be in our city limits.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where every time I hear the word CATSO in my head, and I'd be interested to know if I'm thinking about this incorrectly, I think, okay, it's the way in which we pull down federal funds. It's that intergovernmental relationship that's a necessary element of getting those federal funds. But it really is it's the county's road plan that then becomes our road plan when we annex that in.
And so,
is that fair characterization?
That's fair. And I think the hard part is, from a city standpoint, when it's our roadway, so if we're looking at a road that's going to be developed, we can make sure that it's developed along our CAP guidelines and make sure that it's done under our processes. With the county, if it's a road that the county's developing, they're going to develop it underneath their guidelines. And you're right, at some point, we may end up annexing that roadway into the city. And 9 times out of 10, we're going to have to upgrade it to fit our standards. And so that is part of an issue. I think the rub is, as we're looking at saying that here's our CAP guidelines, I don't know if we can force the county to use that lens when they're developing their roadways.
But wouldn't it be an appropriate role for those four representatives from the city to turn into advocates and argue it out? I've been to 2 CATSO meetings. I was surprised by several things that happened in the room, including the fact that many of them had proxies. But that being said, shouldn't our team become the advocates for trying to push this forward, knowing that one day we're going to inherit those roads?
I think there's probably a better mechanism to do that than to try to do it by force.
Well, it's not force, but we all have advocacy capacity in our roles.
Yeah, but we also don't want to create an adversarial approach either. So there's that balance.
Sure.
And so there's the balance of how do we cooperate with each other and how do we work collaboratively to make sure these are the goals that we're looking at. And I think there's a lot of things that we can convince that, hey, this is a better way of doing these processes.
I think there's room for that.
Yes, I agree.
Lot.
I think there's definitely ways to do it. But
I
wouldn't want to say we're going to force you to go down this roadway because I think we'll lose our county partners that way. And I don't want to do that.
It seems to me like we're really talking about a cover letter here. The meat of the matter really has to do with the alignment of plans and the dissonance between CATSO and the city, and I think that's pretty well established in most of this. When we start talking about this last paragraph, we get involved in a little bit, what the staff can do and what the advocates can do and so on. Maybe it would just be simpler to change that last paragraph for this cover letter to read something like, as part of our commitment to our own public engagement and community representation processes, we will direct the City of Columbia to carefully review the approval of funds allocations or projects that work against the city's goals and plans, including the CAP. I mean, that essentially gives them notice that the city is working on behalf of their own interests in this cover letter, and points the direction up to clarifying some of those misalignments, if you will.
Yeah, I'm happy with that, as long as we are sort of stating our authority to direct our professional staff to take a certain position. The problem with the CATSA Coordinating Committee is there is never any discussion or debate about anything. I mean, I've been to 50% or more of the meetings in the last 9 years, and everything is just rubber stamped by the committee. It's a complete just kind of crank it out. There's never any discussion of values, philosophy, and we can do that without being adversarial. I mean,
yes.
I guess it might be interpreted as adversarial by somebody else, but I think we can represent values that come from our community, through our city council, through our boards and commissions, and ultimately to the way we interact with Boone County and MODOC.
And I think your points are well taken, and that is that doesn't mean that the conversation cannot change or should not change. It should change. And I think that the indication from this letter, because of that misalignment and some of that direction, may in fact change some of that conversation, but the real hammer comes when the funds are really allocated. And to your point, it's a good thing that you brought up the idea that there are numbers, and they do talk about these kinds of things, and they do filter down. And sometimes, if they're not carefully considered as carefully as they should be, it's just it's just the way things work out. And we should take a closer look at that stuff, and I think that might be indicated by just, you know, by putting that that suggestion in there.
I think also a lot of the CATSO meetings, they are rubber stamped because all the work goes on behind the scenes.
Yes, well,
and so I think a letter like this informs them that they can do it in public or they can do it behind the scenes, but we need to start looking at it this way, and we're serious about it.
Yeah.
And you know, and so I'm fine with the letter with either what Brian recommended or what Carl recommended for the
which requires them, and I'm fine with that as well.
So do we need to, like...
We need to get the final wording to Sheila.
Final wording to Sheila and ask
yeah.
her.
You want me to give her what I just told you?
That sounded
like
good
Brian,
to me.
Sorry.
Or whatever he said.
All right, whatever he said.
Yeah, whatever
he's
he
not
said.
Here, so I'm...
Well, he's out there pacing. And
well,
that's
the way it goes. I mean, that's
so what's that last paragraph?
Well, the way I read it was, as a part of our commitment to our own public engagement and community representation process, we will direct the City of Columbia to carefully review the approval of funds, allocations, or projects that work against city goals and plans, including the CATS.
I thought we were like something like we'll consider. Did anybody write down?
We'll review projects consistent with
okay.
city goals, plans, including the CATS.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Sorry,
get
Carl.
That, Sheila?
Not really.
No.
So are you still directing somebody or not? Because it's the
yes, mayor's... Yes, I think we're still directing.
Directing
the
city
to review their decisions consistent with city goals and plans.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead
projects
of...
Projects consistent with...
Yeah, we're wrapping this up,
carefully
Brian, but we can't remember what
you
said.
Did.
Consider projects consistent with the approval of funding.
It was directional there.
I think that's what she said.
Here's what I had. Review projects consistent. Review as part of our commitment, City of Columbia representatives on CATSO Coordinating Committee will review projects consistent with the city goals and plans, including the CAP.
They just wanted to put the direct the city of
well,
Columbia.
I'm sorry, Brian.
I'm
but I think we is the city council, and we are not making decisions on the CATSO Coordinating Committee. So we do need to direct our City of Columbia representatives on the CATSO Coordinating Committee to, and we don't have to be absolutist to not approve funds, allocations of projects that work against city goals and plans. But to cast their votes consistent with, or something like that.
Mayor,
Nancy.
Under the charter, you may not direct city staff.
That's right.
City staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so
we'll take that.
So if you just left.
Okay, well.
The city manager is one of those representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can direct city management.
City management.
You may not direct city staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brian, what did your sentence say? You didn't include the director, right? Well, what did you say?
City representatives on the CATSO committee will review projects. I first had through the lens of, or consistent with, the city's goals and plans.
Okay, so take out we will direct and say that they, City of Columbia representative on the CATSO coordinating committee, will review projects consistent with. Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Got it.
Are we done with that?
And silent.
Yeah, I got silent.
Yeah.
That's a statement of policy, not a direction.
Right. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you, Nancy.
Well, and Pam, thank you for coming up with the letter, and Carolyn, thank you for sending us the paperwork. You know,
doing all the research.
All the work.
Analysis.
So thank you.
Let's keep moving because we have one more item and then a closed session,
okay.
And it's already after 6.
Yeah.
Police and fire pension update.
Yes, sir. And I'm going to run through this, so it'll be a little quicker than what you had planned on. But
have we fixed this problem, Jim?
Yeah, we fixed it. We're getting there.
No pressure, Jim.
We have another problem for you.
Thanks. So then for that, what does that start?
Yeah,
So we're just going to quickly kind of, we want to put this in front of you. A lot of you probably haven't been here since the last time we did an experience study in 2015, so we kind of want to make you aware of it. And its financial implications for the city. So what is the fact, what is the experience study? So every 5 to 6 years, the actuaries evaluate the assumptions that go into the actual reports to determine if any of those assumptions have changed. And there are 6 key assumptions that the experience study looks at that affect the financial position of the pension. So those 6 key assumptions are long-term rates of investment, which make up investment returns and inflation rate, patterns of pay increases to members, which is called wage inflation, rates of mortality among members, rates of withdrawal of active members, rates of disability among members, and the age patterns of actual retirements. So we're just going to look at the economic assumptions because that's what the main focus of the main changes were for this experience study. So the key economic assumptions are investment return, inflation rate, and wage inflation. And then our current assumptions are 7% investment return, 2.5% inflation rate, and 3.25% inflation, wage inflation. So changes to any of these assumptions have financial impacts on the city's contribution rate. So our actuary looked at our current assumptions and came back with what his recommendations are for new assumptions. So he suggests moving the investment assumption from 7% to somewhere between 6.5% to 5.75%, which will have a negative impact, meaning the city's going to have to contribute more money to the pension. Just so you guys know, the actuary will not certify our actuarial report if we do not go to at least 6.5%.
Actually recommended us going to 5.75%, but if we did that, we would be looking at basically doubling the salaries while police and fire, because we'd be paying salary to the employee and then salary to the agency.
Yeah, and I think that we'll kind of go through what these effects will have. Inflation rate, they're suggesting no change to that, and he actually suggested moving the inflation, wage inflation down to 2.75, which actually helps us a little bit on that one. Yes?
Do you think that's realistic given what we're experiencing right now? I mean, I know it's temporary.
I think, so when you look at these assumptions, you need to think of them for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. So this, like, even you look at inflation, you're like, we're not 2.5 right now. Well, all the experts are still looking at this saying, you know, 30 years from now, where are we going to be at? You know, so you're looking over a very long period of time to kind of come up with where these numbers are. So yeah, you're right. Currently, these are low, but historically, 3.25 was high for the city. So you have to kind of look at the whole picture when you're looking at these things. So.
One more comment. Given that we're in a difficult place with the wages that we pay all of our staff, and I know we have a wage study underway, but moving that down, I know that makes some other numbers look good, but I'm concerned that we're going to have to take some more deliberate steps than 2.75%.
This isn't going to be locked in place forever, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be for probably a 5-year period, and then we're going to reassess it at that point.
And this is only the pension.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's only the pension. Which
is a percentage of the wages.
Yeah, this only affects police and fire pension.
Yeah.
Doesn't affect any other loggers, pension, or anything.
Okay. Thank you.
So I just want to bring up this other economic factor because it's going to pertain to what the city council, what city staff, excuse me, and what the fire pension are going to recommend. So the other factor that does have an effect on the contribution rate to the pension is the amortization of the unfunded liability, which is currently at year 26. Just so you guys are all aware, as of 9/30/2020, our unfunded liability was at $113 million. So there's currently a 26-year plan to get that liability to zero. So these are the various scenarios that our actuarial gave to us. I'm just going to focus on the investment returns piece of this because all the other ones are staying, are not changing from this these different scenarios. So scenario A is a 6.5 return, B is 6.25, and C is 6, and D is 5.75. So currently, just so you've got an understanding of the numbers, this is our current assumptions. Right now, police employer contribution rate is at 42.95%. So like what Matthew said earlier, every police officer we hire, we're also contributing whatever their wage is, we're contributing 42% of that to their pension.
Mm-hmm.
Fire is at 63.18. So this comes to $4.5 million of city funds contributing to the police portion, and $6.4 million contributing to the fire portion, a total of $10.9 million.
Jim?
Yes.
As we contribute that amount, we're not making the unfunded liability worse. That's
correct.
This is a neutral to keep it steady.
It should slightly improve.
Oh, so it's actually a little extra to lower it.
Yes.
Over that 26
yes.
years, you're basically saying we're going to fund it. We will be fully funded in 26 years.
So when we put just under $11 million in it, part of it is to meet our current
yes.
responsibilities, and then the rest is to pay off the accumulated debt, for lack of a better word. For it. Thank you.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, so here's scenario A. This is the 6.5 percent rate of return. So I'm just kind of, I highlighted the areas that kind of you want to focus on. So the police pension contribution rate goes up to 46%, fire to 73%. This comes to a total change, so you saw that $11 million, a total change of $1.2 million. Every year that the city is going to have to increase their contributions by to get on this new interest rate assumption. Scenario B is looking at a 6.25%. You can see the police rate's now at 48.48 and fire's at 77.52. And the city is going to have to contribute almost $2 million additional dollars every year to keep that, to reflect that interest rate. C is the 6% one. Police, you're up to 51%. Fire, you're up to 82%. And $2.6 million additional funding every year. Indeed, Matthew said, this is like the one they would like us to see to get to, is 5.75. 53.6% police contribution, 86.69 fire, and $3.3 million additional dollars every year to cover that. So all this has got presented to the police and fire boards on March 11th, and they came back with what their recommendations are. So the next slide will cover it. So the fire board looked at these different scenarios and came to the conclusion that they would recommend us going to the 6.25% with the wage inflation of 2.75, but they also recommended moving the amortization schedule from 26 years to 30 years. This would lessen the amount we would have to contribute every year. Obviously, it pushes back our end date for our liability, but it essentially would bring our rate of return to 6.25, which is closer to what the actuaries want, and allows us to have a contribution, an additional contribution by the city closer to scenario A, which is that $1.2 million. The police board just recommended the flat 6.25 with the wage inflation of 2.75, which is just straight scenario B, in which you can see there is the $1.9 million. They did not want to change the amortization schedule. So the city staff, when we looked at this, we thought the most reasonable thing for the city to do is to get a more reasonable rate of return, but still allowing the city some flexibility with what we can contribute. So we're essentially kind of mirroring what the fire pension portion was saying. 6.25% rate of return, interest rate at 2.5, wage inflation at 2.75, and moving that amortization schedule to 26, back to 30 years, which would mean about an additional $1.2 million of contributions from the city to the police and fire pension. So that's everything. I went through that pretty quick. So, but I think we're planning on bringing this to you guys for our recommendation for approval next council meeting. If you guys want to look over this and take some time, Matthew and I would be happy to answer any questions through email or whatever.
Yeah. So if I were more knowledgeable about pensions than I am, and my knowledge is small, and I were sitting on the Fire and Police Pension Board, why would I want us to follow the recommendation? Why would the Fire Board want us to do that? Because I realize the percentage that we're contributing to catch up is pretty high. But is that to keep enough funds available for pay increases as we go along? Is that their motivation?
Yeah, because you can see the fire one has a much bigger effect.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, scenario, you know. So what they wanted to do is minimize the city's contribution rate on fire to allow them to have more flexibility for other things that they might need. Because, I mean, Matthew, you know better than I, what percentage of the pension is taken out? What percentage of our contribution to the fire is part of their budget? It's like 50% or something. Yes, it's a huge number of what is currently a part of the budget. So
which,
this would allow them more flexibility.
Which doesn't leave us a lot of money to improve their pay.
Exactly. Yeah.
How did we get, I'm new, how did we get this far out of whack? I mean, I get that.
That's a long question.
Is it?
A lot of fault in the parts of probably every person involved with the pension. So I don't know if we
you can't answer that today?
Yeah. That's a long discussion.
Yeah,
well, obviously something happened because it's that far out of whack.
Yeah, I mean, there was not actual investments going on. Which is, we are actually investing now.
In the recession of 08 really hammered all pensions across the board, and us especially, because of how our investments were sitting at that time.
And as we look at our investment policy, one thing that we may need to visit, one thing will be coming up, I think it's on the agenda tonight, sort of changing our investments with more risk and more reward. There's a bad side to that as well, but we definitely need to look at some either higher risk with some higher yields or something of that nature to sort of generate more interest for this fund.
Is that a realist, including real estate in their portfolio?
Yes.
That's that, okay. Do you feel comfortable with the fact that we're keeping the police pension fund on a 26-year amortization? We're not. We're taking both of them to 30?
All or
nothing.
Oh,
yeah.
We're taking both of them to 30.
Yeah. I want to treat these differently.
Yeah, so this is essentially, if you look
okay.
at scenario A, this is what we're recommending, except the rate of return would be 6.25,
mm-hmm.
and we would have an amortization schedule moving it back to 30 years instead of its current 26 years.
Did we get to 26 because not because we've already done 4 years?
Yeah,
we
did 4 years because there was an experience study done, I think, in 2015 or 2016. Matt, you were on that one, I think. And there was a plan to get they had a 30-year amortization schedule then. We're 4 years into that, and now we're asking to go back to 30 years.
So in my world, it's like we're refinancing our mortgage
exactly.
back to the full 30-year note.
Did any other council members have questions?
So the impact on fire is greater than it is on police. Is that because fire has a larger percentage of its participants in the pre-2012 plan? Or
that could be a portion of it. I think, I mean, their plan's a little better than the police plan. There's less.
They're not in Social Security.
Yeah, they're not.
And so their benefits are a little better to make up for that.
Okay,
not paying into Social Security as well.
Where is like loggers other in other municipal plans in terms of their investment return?
We have looked at that. Loggers move from 7.25 to 7%. Much higher rate, and it was accepted by last year. The reasoning that we received was they have a little bit riskier portfolio, but they have a bigger portfolio as well, and they're funded a little higher than the oil. quite a bit higher.
So there would be a, so it'd be financially more beneficial for the city if future, if some at some point in the future, the new employees were going into loggers.
It would be beneficial at some point. If we were to look at something like that, police and fire would not contribute to their pension either. So that money would be going into their pocket.
And GASB is okay with resetting the amortization or whatever authorities?
Well, it's really the actuarial. We have.
Okay.
He said if we move to 6.25, and he would be okay with moving it to 30 years because he feels that he wants to get a number as realistic as possible. Getting to 6.25 or rather than 6.5 is better for him, so he's willing to make that concession with the amortization schedule.
And have you guys done any work on what the impact to these annual contributions would be if we were to make, you know, large-scale contributions into the plan?
There's not a contribution large enough, unless you want to pay $113 million that would move it at this point. And one of the things we have looked at and we discussed with our investors is that a large chunk of money going into this fund is would not be recommended. It would be recommended if you want to put extra into it to do incremental, smaller portions over a period of time.
So incrementally increasing it over, you know, 5 years, or is
like
it?
You want to throw, I don't know, throw whatever number you can fit. Or we could do some run some numbers to see how we hear. If you want to get up to $10 million, $20 million extra dollars, so incrementally.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, after that 5 or 7 year period or whatever, I mean, it seems like that would be moving the needle at that point, right? I mean, I get what you're saying about not, you don't want to do it all at once, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be good to, you know, at least be aware of those scenarios.
We plan to put a few of these scenarios together and have a meeting with both the fire and the police pension, and I mean we would welcome any council members that would want to come and sit on that, because we have to have a serious conversation about where we want the pension in the future.
Okay, great.
If you give me enough lead time on scheduling, I will try and be there because this is something I need to understand better.
Yeah, we're looking at about next month around this time, but I'll lock down a date.
Okay. And I'll pay attention.
If you let me know also.
Yeah, just a comment. I know this is coming up before the city council, so we'll make this decision. But at first blush and the presentation, I'm inclined to favor the staff's recommendation and the concessions that the actuarial made. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Anybody else? Thanks.